Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. Good to have you with us here on the Mark Steiner Show on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. We're about to have a conversation with Andreas Pilliades, who is the Green Party candidate for the 3rd District seat in Baltimore City Council. He and Ryan Dorsey going head-to-head in the 3rd District for that seat in this new city council. A lot of really interesting, I think, new young people running. Spilly, good to have you in the studio. Welcome.
Thank you. Good to be here, Mark.
He's known as Spilly, which is why we call him Spilly. But it'll be Andreas Pilliades on the ballot.
Spilly will be on Spilly the ballot.
Okay, yeah. Interesting. 410-319-8888. Good move. You can join us here to ask questions of Spilly. You can also tweet us at Mark Steiner. Send an email to talk@steinershow.org. 410-319-8888 is the number to call in to ask questions. And this will be the first of many conversations we're having with city council candidates. And we're actually going to start doing our roundtables with them here in the studio so you can hear their views, not in debate, but in conversation about where the city is going, which can help you make up your mind who you want to vote for. When you hear Ryan Dorsey and Spilly and others sitting in this room together talking about the city, we'll learn more about what they really think. So let's start.
Good stuff.
Good. It is good stuff. So just to begin this, I'm curious. This DOJ report just came out.
Right.
And I know you read part of it already, probably.
Yep.
So tell me what your sense is and what your commentary would be on that, and what your commentary in terms of what being a potential city council person would be about that.
Well, I'm very glad it came out, because I think that it shows some things that if you've been living in the community for a long time, you know them to be true. And, you know, as things have gone down with the trials, we have seen that the presentation of what is happening with police is not the same as the findings of DOJ. And that can be, I think, very tough on the city's psyche when we know things are going on, but they get covered up. There's no justice. So I think this is very good in terms of just making the case that we need police reform and that the police are acting in the way that they are.
So how do you see that? What does police reform mean to you? What does transforming public safety mean to you? I mean, what do you put forth that's different than anybody else is saying about it?
Well, I mean, I think that there's many different levels to it. There's many ways that there's many steps that can be taken. We talk about community policing, and I think that's becoming such a buzzword. And I think, indeed, a lot of the community policing initiatives, as we understand them right now, should be enacted, in our city for sure. We need more civilian review. We need different training practices for police. We need more police on the street. But I think when I think about community policing, though, I like to think of it at an even deeper level. In other words, really breaking that down, community policing. So it's not just that police act in a different way or that police procedure is different, but also that the community plays a role in the actual policing so that – we fund more things like community mediation might be a really good example of something that, we can start thinking about people in the community as community police or how about community peace officers. And so much of the role of policing, and this is at this point, given the circumstances that we're in, it is a kind of utopian view, but I think that that's the ultimate goal, is that we really get a police presence that is from the community.
So a couple of things. Before we get to the phones, at 410-319-8888 comes these calls that are coming in. Gary, you're the first caller up. Describe your district. Who is District 3?
Well, we're Northeast Baltimore. Pretty much the Harford Road corridor from about Mayfield all the way up to the county line. And it fans out from from a smaller point.
It includes Morgan State University.
It includes Morgan State.
Where we're sitting right now.
Yeah, and yeah, so Northeast Baltimore.
So one of your opponents has been on the show before, and he'll be on here again as well, Ryan Dorsey, running as a Democratic candidate. Ran as a very kind of left progressive candidate. You're running as green. So how do you separate that out? Because you know what I'm saying?
Right. Well, I think that the progressive values that I have are really based on a lifetime of experience and a lifetime of community work, activism, teaching. Early on in my career, I worked for Kurt Schmoke in the Schmoke administration. So, you know, it's based on a lot of experience, a lot of reading, a lot of real study.
And you helped found the Baltimore Urban Debate Leagues and worked in that for years.
Yeah, coached there and worked there for over a dozen years.
And teaching at Forest Park High School.
Right. So, you know, my form of progressivism and, you know, the politic that I bring in to the city council is really based on a deep experience and you know, my opponent, you know, I don't want to speak for him, but he claimed a lot of progressive ideas in the things that he said. Actions speak louder than words, and some things that have happened, you know, since the primary make me wonder. And I think that, you know, the Democratic Party in general in this city is suspect. Because
you chose to run as green. Why did you choose to run green and not Democrat?
Well, you know, I was born here in 1967. That was the last time that anybody held a position that was not a Democrat in this city at any level of city government. And I was raised a Democrat. You know, I'm a Baltimore Democrat. Like I mentioned before, you know, worked in Democratic administrations. But I think after so many years, it has become more and more of a corrupt party. It has become more and more of a party that caters to the very people who fund it. And it's very easy to see these lines. You know, you can draw the lines between, you know, who is supported financially and how their votes go down and how, you know, things go down. So the Democratic Party in this city has become such an entrenched machine that, you know, at some point in my life, I started to feel like we needed a second party in this city, an opposition party.
Other than the Republicans, you mean?
Well, I don't think the Republicans even play in Baltimore.
Right, right. I'm just kidding. Yeah.
They play. They're, you know,
there are some viable candidates.
Met plenty of Republicans, and most of the Republicans in Baltimore that I've met do not resemble the national party whatsoever. So, you know, I think that they're closer to Green Party in Baltimore than they are to the Democratic Party. So,
410-319-8888. Andreas Spiliopoulos is running for the city council on the Green Party ticket here in the 3rd District. I say here because our studios are in the 3rd District. 410-319-8888 to join in this conversation, to ask him any questions you'd like. We have more coming up for him, as well as you can tweet us at Mark Steiner. You can write an email to talk@steinershow.org. I'll check our Facebook messages in a minute. 410-319-8888. And Gary, you're on the air. Welcome. Hi, Gary, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hello?
Gary, you're on the air. You there, Gary?
Hello?
You're on the air.
Wow. That was a very inopportune moment for my earpiece to disconnect. Anyway.
We got you now.
We got you.
I'm trying to return a chainsaw to Home Depot while waiting for you guys. Anyway,
okay. Well, go ahead.
I fully endorse Spilly, even though I don't live or vote in the Northeast. Spilly was with me and a bunch of other folks over at the Gilmore home some months ago, trying to help raise the morale of the citizenry. Spilly would never say this about himself, but he's a balance artist supreme. probably could walk between the former World Trade Centers if he put his mind to it. But
you there, Gary? Gary? Seems we lost Gary again.
We lost him. But, yeah, I remember working with you over at Gilmore Homes.
So you're going to walk between the trade – you're going to do the high wire act?
No heights. No extreme heights. But I do balance things on my head for a living. That might need some more explanation, but I'll leave it at that.
We'll leave it at that for now. We'll come back to that. So coming back to your run. So right now there's a huge debate taking place in City Council on two different things. Let's start one at a time and see where you stand on these issues and what you would be doing if, in fact, you were sitting on the City Council right now. One is a $15 an hour minimum wage. It looks like maybe heading for a narrow defeat in the City Council. At this moment, it does, at any rate. Your thoughts on that?
I'm fully in support of a $15 minimum. I think that a living wage is a human right. And I recognize that, on the opposition point of view, especially, my family, and I'm deeply involved in small business, it can be difficult to maintain a $15 an hour minimum wage for small businesses, which is why I think, on the other side of this issue, there needs to be some incentives that that help this to be a more manageable operation, when it becomes a reality. But I'm absolutely in favor of $15 an hour minimum.
So they try to make some compromises on this bill, and I mean, what would you do something different about than what this bill is doing in terms of what it's proposing? I think it was a $500,000 limit. Some small businesses are exempt. Civic works and places are exempt, but so how would you, when we talked about how difficult it would be, what would you do to make it undifficult, to make it easier?
Well, my personal stand is very strong on this, so I would not be personally in favor of compromises. However, understanding that the City Council is a body that needs to work together, if I was in the seat right now, I would work with compromising. Certainly I think we need to begin somewhere with this. So, I don't have details. I think that, that is more of a conversation that happens between council people.
So now, what about Port Covington? This becomes a huge issue. This is going to come up for vote. I mean, it may, in fact, depending on when the vote takes place, the President City Council attempted to move the vote up to the 8th of August. Now he's backed away from that. Came out of Carl Stokes' committee. We're not sure when this vote's going to take place, but it's now or in September. But I think it's one of the pivotal issues facing the city. And your take and your stance on this.
Well, I think that should it go through, it would be a in its present form, this TIF and this financing would be a tragedy for Baltimore. And I think a lot has been written on that. I think it's pretty clear how this project takes a divided city and creates even more divide. There's no affordable housing. Benefits to those who need it the most in this city would be negligible. But probably more importantly, I think that the process has been really messed up with this project. It has been pushed through. The public hasn't been given enough of a chance to speak on it. I totally commend the citizens of Baltimore for pushing back so hard, because I think we've pushed back so hard that now it's coming to light and, folks are being forced to listen to community voice on this. But I think that lack of transparency in this process, and, You know, the fact that really the people with the most amount of resources in this whole process have the most amount to gain and are thus able to pour huge amount of resources in trying to convince people that it is, you know, a project that is good for the city. That's a real problem.
I mean, I'm curious as to, I think you're right about the push by the people. I think the combination of the people in Baltimore City who raised a lot of questions about the Port Covington deal, as well as media like our program here has been pushing the issue very hard, the Baltimore Brew, the city paper, I think it did lend the pressure to kind of push it back and didn't allow it to go through, which does show the power of community, what community can do to say, okay, not so fast. So what then is your vision for what development should mean and could mean for Baltimore? I mean, we clearly need – I mean, you look at what happened right. at Harbor Point. You look at what's happening with EBDI in East Baltimore where hundreds of black families were moved out, working-class families, and now – families of means are going to be able to move in with these loans from Hopkins. You've got, and then you look at Port Covington. So what is your vision for how you develop the city that's different than the establishment vision that is what is paramount here at the moment? Or it takes precedence, I should say.
Right. Well, I mean, if you look at TIF law and how TIFs work, the city actually has tremendous amount of potential to leverage all kinds of positive things through the process. So, you know, I would say that that business can be incentivized tremendously in this city in similar amounts as we've seen with, you know, Harbor Point and with the proposal at Port Covington. But it needs to be done in a very different way, one that really looks at the overall economy of a community rather than just, you know, as it stands, we are letting corporate welfare be railroaded every time. You know, so I would say that there's plenty of mechanisms in the government for tax incentives and other government incentives to bring business. Or really, I mean, I don't think that the issue is bringing business. I think it's creating business here in Baltimore, allowing community wealth to be built here.
How do you do that? What do you mean by building community wealth? What does that mean?
Well, you know, when you bring a huge corporation into the city and give them huge tax breaks to create jobs – rather than incentivizing small business, medium-sized business, business that is here, incentivizing the incredible amount of innovation that is going on with our universities, that actually allows ownership to be more equitable.
Folks, do join us, 410-319-8888. This is a man who wants to sit on the city council, Andreas Spiliadis. Billy Spiliadis is running in the 3rd District as a Green Party candidate. Your chance to ask questions of him, as you'll do the other candidates coming through here, and they will be coming through here as we approach this election in November, 410-319-8888. You can email us, talk@steinershow.org, tweet us at Mark Steiner, log on to our Facebook pages, 410-319-8888. Your thoughts about the future of the city. When you think about running for the city, being on the city council, let me come back to police for a moment. I mean, there's a public safety committee. There's a and on the city council. I don't know what committee you would be on if you were elected, but so, what kind of oversight do you think police need? How should we approach the question of reforming the department itself, which I think is going to be a major topic, given the DOJ report, given what just not just with Freddie Gray, but things have been happening in the city. The No Boundaries Coalition report that came out, which was a very intense piece that predated this piece by months. So what would be your approach? Where do you begin to talk about how you change the nature of public safety and police? I mean, what would you do on the council?
Well, how about stronger community review boards? I mean, let's start there. Let's push, and I think that the city council can push for, you know, the type of training that is needed. Let's push for more cops from Baltimore. You know, let's hire more police from within the community. These are some of the places.
I mean, there used to be with the old Wahlberg High School. It was supposed to be an academy for public safety, training future police, fire, and other workers for the city. But that fell apart as a place to actually get kids from Baltimore City who were interested in this and train them for those 4 years as they're being trained academically and in the arts and athletics to be prepared to come out. And we let that go.
Right. Why? You know, and we can see the ramifications of letting projects like that go. You know, that's why we are here now. And, you know, I think that that's sort of an example of the type of thing that we can do to begin to turn things around.
So talk about this philosophy you have that you put on your website your about the greening of Baltimore.
Yeah, well, you know, I think that we live in a toxic city for sure. This city was built up in its heyday with, you know, plenty of industrial jobs that created a very, very toxic city. Our waterways are polluted. Our harbor is polluted. You know, I heard earlier your show talking about lead. There is so much lead and arsenic in this city. But the thing that I've learned through the urban farming that I'm doing, you know, here in East Baltimore, Northeast Baltimore, is that environments are very resilient. And if you begin to work with them, they can transition amazingly. There's so much that can be rebound. And so, you know, I really have a vision of a greener Baltimore. And I think that, you know, that that is where the future economy is going to go.
What does that, so talk a bit more about, get more in depth about that. So what does it take to have a greening of Baltimore? And well, let's start there and then go to the question of the economy. What does it take to make a greening? What would it look like? What are you advocating should happen?
Well, you know, there's a number of different areas that I think that this should go in. But I'll start with farming because that's what I do. You know, if you go around Baltimore City, you will see that we have enough land between schools, vacant lots, front, side, backyards, rooftops. We have unbelievable amounts of land that could be farmed. We have the potential to grow enough food inside of the city to feed the whole city.
You really think that's true?
I really think that's true. I mean, I do think that is that's a notion that questions that pushes our imagination, maybe our revolutionary imagination. It is possible. It is physically possible. You know, what it would take to make it happen would be an entire paradigm shift about how we do things. But, you know, I think that there is so much potential there that I would like to make it a life mission to see how much of that potential can be unleashed. And so, you know, for the past 6 years, we've been not just farming, but also creating an idea called Plant a Farmer. And
Plant a Farmer. What does that mean?
Well, you know, I think a lot of people have a notion of farming or urban farming that is a little bit romantic and maybe is like, you know, we just need to get a whole bunch of volunteers out every now and then to all do a planting and then, you know, we'll be able to eat. But it's actually so much more work than that idea. And so, you know, not everybody is ready to be a farmer. It does take a lot of sweat, but it's a powerful, beautiful thing to do. I mean, it's therapeutic and metaphoric, and it's really an opportunity for people to grow. So, what we believe is that, you know, we have to introduce people to farming gradually, find people who are really, you know, who take off with it, and, you know, be a community of farmers that supports the growth of other farmers. And, you know, just in the 6 years that we've been doing this, my neighborhood has gone from the point where our little local farmers market on Harford Road used to be all the farmers that were there were from outside of the district. We were, from out in the county. And we were the only farmer that was at the stand at the market that was really local. Now it's, you know, blossomed out. There's more farmers. Every day we've been giving out seeds. More and more people are interested. It seems like it's tenfold from what it was when we started. So I really feel like once you see this momentum growing, you realize that ideas that maybe didn't seem possible are actually possible.
So I want to get to a piece here that I think is really important. You're a father.
Yeah.
Right?
Great man.
No, I said you're a father.
Oh, I'm a father.
Not your father. Father is a great guy.
Oh, yeah.
You're a father.
I'm a father, yes.
So talk a bit about schools in the city. This is a huge, we spend very little money of our city budget on schools.
Right.
And it's a huge issue in terms of the battle between charter schools and what role they play in the city schools now. What we move forward. So what? Talk a bit about what you would bring to the city council about that.
Well, what is your question exactly? Because I mean, city council has an impact. Can have impacts on
right
education, but you know. I would not be able to bring my utopian vision of education or even fully the critique of the current system into city council. So
you wouldn't be able to? Why not?
Well, I mean, I'd bring it in. you know I'm going to bring it in.
So what is it? I'm saying so for our listeners to hear what that is. I mean, what is your vision for education in the city? How would to push? What would you push to change? What would be your ideas to make it different, to change it for the benefit of our children?
Right. Well, I think that our education system, and I've seen this firsthand, both as a teacher and as a parent, is in deep, deep trouble. And you know, so I mean, I think that fundamentally, the education system, in order to be successful, needs to see a complete shift in the pedagogy. You know, fundamentally, the pedagogy that is controlling the schools. So, what I mean by pedagogy, that's how the study of how education happens, and since in the past 20 years, let's say, the pedagogy of our school system has shifted so enormously to a test-based system, to a system that is really homogenized, where students are really not the focus. The focus is on having massive success in nationwide tests. And so, you know, I think we need to change the basic position that we have on teaching and learning in order to have success in schools. And I think the other piece of it really is that we need to view schools and school buildings differently. Like if they were going to be very successful, and this could totally happen, a school would not just be a place where classes occurred and students moved from class to class and then the bell rang at the end of the day and it was over. schools have enormous amount of material resources and that can be leveraged by communities. I think it would be great to have schools that were open, late into the evening, that had adult classes, that had, health care can be provided at schools. There's so much that can happen at schools. So I think if we saw them as having greater potential for the whole community than they currently do, I think that would be great for our city.
So, Andreas Spiliadis, how do people get in touch with you and your campaign?
You can go to our website, spillyforthethird.com. Also, Spilly for the Third on Facebook, on Twitter, all those things. SpillyForTheThird@gmail.com if you want to, send me an email. Come and see me. I'm all over the place with hula hoops and with urban farming. So you can come and see us on Tuesdays at the Harford Road Farmers Market, Sunday under the JFX.
Perfect. And so we'll have you back on shortly, have a continuing conversation, you and other candidates in the room together, talking about the future of Baltimore. I'm glad you come here to introduce yourself to our listeners and your campaign as a Green Party candidate for the 3rd District City Council seat. Andreas Spiliadis, good to see you.
Wonderful. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you. Take a short transition here. Time to see what's in the city paper. Don't go away.